Welcome to the Reflex Blue Show. Number 90. I have with me some people from, can I say where you're at? You're at Hayneedle, right? I mean, I can say that,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
All right. Aaron Stubbe and Chris Kelly, what do you do over there at Hayneedle? And for our listeners, what is Hayneedle? Because it's the supposedly the next Amazon is what, if you go to their website, they'll tell you. But what does that mean?
Hayneedle is your online place to find everything home. So we sell, we're an online retailer. We sell things from furniture to outdoor things like fire pits, hammocks, and all that kind of stuff. And really everything in between.
And you've been there a while. I mean, if for our listeners that actually pay attention, and this doesn't even include me, I think you were on the show, one of the last shows was How to Get a Job in Design. And so obviously this worked for you because you've been employed now.
Yeah. It was a while because it was when the economy was taking a dump. But, you know, eventually I found something. It kind of, a lot of those connections worked out well for me. What was
the big thing? Was there anything you want to add to kind of that show that we did about how to get a job? Anything that you maybe want to add to that worked the best, or that maybe you kind of be like, that was terrible advice?
I drank a lot since then, so I don't really remember exactly what I said. But, you know, the big thing was connections. The guy that actually used to work with you before I did actually was working at Hayneedle when they had an opening come up, and he gave me a call. It was all about who I knew. I'd love to say it was my rock star talent that got me in the door, but it was a lot of it was just because I knew the right guy.
And really, to add to that, it was my connection to Chris and my connection to Joe Rizzo that brought me to Hayneedle about a year later. So.
And how long have you guys both been there?
I'm just over 2 years now, so that would put you at a year?
Almost a year. Actually, in June, it would be a year.
And what is your actual roles there? You guys are all on the web right now, right? And I know you guys are starting to do some print things. I've heard rumors of these, but I don't know what they actually are. What is your actual role at Hayneedle?
I think that's one of the great things about Hayneedle is actually in-house in general is that we quite a bit of variety of products, like a breadth of projects to work on. It's mostly been web ads and email and graphics for the homepage, but it's everything from airport signage that you've been working on to a catalog that it's been keeping me busy for the last couple of months. And
you don't have to lie, you were staying late a lot of nights and getting that shit done. But
yeah,
that's probably the biggest print thing we've done ever.
Yeah, other than that, it's been like some inserts and a couple little promotional pieces to get like editors involved and stuff like that. But
oh, sure. Now, what we actually brought you two on the show for was because you guys had both been working at agencies of various extents. You were at a local kind of ad shop, Aaron.
Yep.
For a couple years.
6 years.
6 years, Chris. You were actually at the same local ad shop for a short while, and then you were here at my agency, which is even smaller, part time for a year. And then you guys both made the jump to what we call in this industry an in-house job, which means that you're working for basically the client directly. Is that the definition of in-house?
I think so. I don't know.
Works for me.
Okay. What was it that made you guys decide to make the in-house jump? And we're going to talk about kind of what you've learned about it and if you'd recommend it to others.
I mean, me personally, it was a really good opportunity. It was a company that I could tell when I went there, it was growing really fast. So it was a great chance to get in on something that I could tell was hopefully going to become something really big and to get in kind of early on it. There's a lot of good things to in-house. One thing that I really like about where we are is we always have custom photography just at our whim. That's not going to be the case everywhere. But at Hayneedle, we have a whole photography studio that we can use, and we just run over there real quick and get them to shoot something for an email if we need it. Lots of times the benefits are better. It's a little bit more stable. If you happen to lose a client, that doesn't mean you're going to be the next guy to go because it was your client that happened to ditch. So there's definitely that stability that's great.
I found when I worked in-house, I was at a place that was, when you mentioned losing clients, I was at a place that was losing employees very quickly. One of the advantages I found was it was very easy to kind of read the pulse on when you were going to not get your work anymore. Where I know if you're in an agency, there's somebody else, you don't talk directly to the client. If the client, like, all of a sudden isn't doing real well, they kind of hide it from you maybe a little bit.
Right, and right.
When you're in-house, you're like, hey, why is, like, a quarter of the staff just gone?
Yeah, we actually get measured, like, on how well we're moving the needle almost, like, on a daily basis to the degree, and you get that feedback from different departments there, where I don't remember getting that feedback most often at the agency. I mean, unless it was just, you know, like you knocked it out of the park or just abysmally bad, you didn't really hear from the client as to just how effective they thought it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I always know we always talk about, there's a lot of talk out there about results and how much design affects it. But I know at an agency, if you're a few layers in, I don't know if they ever come to you. Because, yeah, you're right. A lot of clients just, if it was successful, they seem to hire you again. And if right. it wasn't, you just never hear anything.
And a lot of times it was almost like they were guarded about certain levels of information. I don't know if that was because they were, you know, maybe trying to keep things competitive as far as how much they wanted to pay for a job. I don't know, but...
Or it comes down to they actually didn't want to track it themselves. There's always that issue that a lot of times we've asked clients, like, was this successful? And they're like, we never got around to tracking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would love to say that all clients track everything perfectly and they'll give you exact results, but we all know that doesn't really happen.
Yeah. It's funny, too. I mean, we're really heavily metrics-based at Hayneedle.
Is that because you make all your money on online sales?
I think that's a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, we have to be we have to be really fast-paced. It's really easy to go ahead and build in programs to go ahead and track how well a campaign did. We do a lot of A/B testing and that sort of thing. And you know, it's really humbling sometimes because a lot of times you'll A/B test something you wanted to do versus something some other marketing guy
and
wanted to do.
What is A/B testing? Is that
You'll run the same thing at the same time, and then different people will end up seeing different ads. So you'll run one version that you think might work one way, and then you'll run another version that you think might be sharing something a little different, and then you run them at the same time. But depending on my computer setup, I might see one version of the other, and then we can tell which one did better.
And these could be totally different promotions, different themes, completely different designs, just to see what outperforms.
And what do you guys learn from this? This actually comes back to you then as a designer?
Yeah. We directly find out how this stuff works, and then a lot of times we find out that the stuff we really wanted to do just kind of tanked. But you know, sometimes you end up winning an argument too. But it's really humbling.
That is, that's one of those things. You just assume that the good design's always going to win. But is there times where just the terrible design somehow wins out?
Yeah, there's times where you kind of question, like, you know, were these results skewed at all? Because you just can't believe the result. But like Chris said, it can be humbling at times. Sometimes it's very useful, you know, things that you can that could kind of shift your approach going into the next project.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more of In-House with Chris Kelly and Aaron Stubbe. Here's the deal. When I was actually in-house, because I started in-house in my career. Well, okay, I worked at an agency for like part-time while I was still in college in like 3 weeks, and then I went in kind of in-house. And I did that for a while. But what I found was that a lot of it is kind of like who you report to. So, you know, I tell when students ask me about jobs, it's like I tell them never discount it. It's all on who you report to, because obviously if you go up, you look like Target, Starbucks. Working in-house there is probably the working better at most agencies. I mean, Chip Kidd is an in-house designer. You know, people don't even think about that because he's working at a book publisher. So I think a lot of it is kind of who you report to. Now, the drawback sometimes, and this is everywhere too, is that you also have the client that's kind of also paying you directly. So they think that, you know, hey, you're coming in, and they may not value you properly. Have you guys had any issues with that, or is the company, like, when the situation you've been put in set up to where they actually value you as a designer and they think of it that way?
Well, you never have to worry about if you're going to get paid or not.
I actually feel like we're valued quite a bit there. I mean, there's some things, for instance, continuing education, there's programs out there that they provide that I was never given that opportunity before, not to that level, like going to Howe.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you guys are going to Howe in Boston.
Yeah, we'll be there.
36 Point's going to be there. You guys are going to have to stop by, and all you listeners out there, if you see me and or Ben Luters, and he's not here today because he's packing for a vacation or something.
Lame.
Yeah. If you see us holding a microphone at, like, one of the closing parties, just stop by and just chat. We're doing daily recaps.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Drop a lot of swears.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we don't spend enough time to edit them out on this show.
No, I listened to last
episode.
Yeah. there you go. That's just how this works. Oh yeah, we had Kevin McConkey on, so I mean that was just waiting to happen.
F bombs left and right.
Yeah. So either way, it's gonna be in Boston. What is it? Is it June 21st through 25th, 20th? I don't know. I'm gonna be there like 6 days. It's gonna be crazy.
Yeah. Well, I fully plan on getting drunk most of those times, but you know, and then going to the events and you know, listening and learning a lot of things for work. But
sometimes the hardest part, by the way, is when you leave and you're like, and you come back the next day and you're like, man, I'm so hungover still. I think I might have actually learned something, and you're not quite sure how that happened. That's all conferences, though.
You just parse it back together in your head, like, incorrectly.
Right. No. There's actually... it's amazing how fast the time flies by at these things.
Yeah, this will be my first time even on, you know, that part of the country, but, you know, even going to Howe, too. So you know, I'm super excited to even go to a design conference of that scale.
Have you been to a smaller conference before?
I've just done like AIGA shows, like local AIGA shows and that sort of thing. But
it's different when they're local because first off, they're normally not multi-days.
Right.
And yeah. Since you live locally, you just kind of go home afterwards. So there's not that networking and chatting and after the events. And
it's almost kind of that school atmosphere, kind of like you're away all together.
Right. Have you been to a conference?
Actually, this will be my first tour.
Man, so there you go. In-house hooks you up.
Yeah.
Actually, the first conference I went to was because I was in-house and they sent me.
There you go.
Yeah. And the agency I was at for 3 weeks did not send me anywhere. I do not know why. I think they were rude and it was terrible.
You were not valued.
Yeah. I was there a solid 3 weeks. Nothing. Should
have just done better work.
Ouch. Well, I was right out of school. Like, right out of school.
Yeah.
God. And that's just how it rolls here. All right. So, either way, I know we've had trouble scheduling this because I always tell people that in-house normally has better hours than agencies, as in it's normally more consistently 40-hour work weeks. But I do know that we've had trouble scheduling the show, partly because... rumor has it, every now and then, you still do have to put in more hours.
Yes, actually, this is true. That was one of the things I was looking forward to as a more easygoing schedule than I was used to at times at Clark. But it isn't always the case. I've definitely put in some weekend hours on our catalog project. And there was a Saturday night. I worked from 2 p.m. to like 1 in the morning before I finally got out of there. So.
Yeah, you were... And I complained a lot over the holidays when I had to, you know, I had to do some late hours. You definitely put me to shame. It kind of made me feel like a big diva. But I think the one big thing is, you know, they realize they don't have to pay extra for changes or anything like that. So it's just like, well, we got this guy over there in design. He'll just change it up real quick.
I actually found, I always thought most of it was because if you work at a place where most of your bosses work about 40 hours, give or take, which they do normally in-house. I mean, that's why they took the job, even if it's a different department. They always were like, they couldn't really tell you to work 60, 70 hours a week, because they're like, well, I'm going home at 6 or 5. I guess you are too. That's just what we do here.
I mean, I wish I could say that, but like, I feel like the nights that I've had to stay late, there's too. Always like the whole marketing team's there too.
Yeah.
Just yeah, same with calling their wives and apologizing and... And you knew this when we got married.
Yeah, we've got some workaholics at A&E, that's for sure.
I think part of that has to do probably with the internet factor.
Because
if it's more corporate jobs, it's in-house is pretty close to 40 hours a week. In my experience, it was almost always right at 40. I had to work to midnight maybe once every 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
And I normally get comp time like the next day. It was normally because some sales guy needed a pitch all put together by, you know, the next morning at 8 and he forgot to get it to me until 5.
When Aaron and I used to work together at the little agency we did in Omaha, we had a printer that we would have to set up to go ahead and print out booklets for clients before we did a presentation. And I just happened to be the guy that lived down the street from it. So I'd have to come back, you know, at 10 o'clock and midnight to make sure the thing was still running. Because we just had, you know, the thing was so slow, I had to come back and check it all the time.
So, basically, sometimes it's best to, even though you may have a shorter commute, it's best to just live as far away from the office as possible.
That's my policy.
Aaron lives, like, 10, 20 miles away from work. But, Yeah, I mean, you know, as, you know, if there's a snow day, then you have an actual legitimate excuse.
Yeah. Get on board.
Now, of course, to our listeners outside of the Nebraska area, when we talk far away from town, we're talking like a 15-20 minute drive to the office.
Yeah, it's not like New York where it's, you know, an hour commute back and forth.
Where you're living in different states across rivers, right. You know, taking chunnels or whatever.
Right.
Chunnels.
I wish we had a chunnel in Omaha.
We'll work on it. Yeah. Get over to Council Bluffs.
There wouldn't be worth the money to build that to go to Council Bluffs.
Yeah, you're right. So right. We'll be right back. All right, let's talk benefits, because that's what everyone really cares when they talk about in-house. First off, I remember I actually had to wear khakis and not t-shirts to work. You know, and that destroys me.
Really?
Yeah, you can't.
Well, I have to pull out an iron. You know, I mean, that's
at in-house. You had to.
Yeah.
Well, we work for, you know, a web company.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that might.
I mean, you know, it's shocking to me that we don't have a rock wall at our office like Google does. That was, you know, that was pretty upsetting. But, you know, I do. Obviously, you can't see me on the radio, but I am wearing a button-up shirt, and that happens to be the most dressed up I am all week.
Okay. Because, yeah, the two questions I always ask when interviewing for anything in-house was, what's the dress code? And the second one, and here's the deal. I didn't really care what the answers were. I'd take the job or not take the job based on the other stuff. I just wanted to know what I could get by with if I actually showed up at the office.
Yeah.
Now, the one that actually mattered, though, was, am I on a PC or Mac?
Right.
Yeah.
And that the one huge. Time... The one time they put me on a PC.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. I did an in-house job where I worked on a PC for, God, I was in college. It was probably about 7 months. And it sucks because, you know, I'd gotten all the hotkeys down on the Mac. And then
right.
You get and you work on the PC, and then that Windows button is in the way of the Apple key.
I'm so ingrained in Mac. I mean, it's all I've used since I got out of school. I'd have to quit the job. I don't think.
The worst part for me was, you know, it's like you use the control key instead of the command key for
right.
all the keyboard shortcuts. The worst part was going back to my, you know, house or whatever, and all of a sudden, like, hitting that control key, and I'm like, I've never even used it on the Mac keyboard, and all of a sudden I'm like, why am I, I've been on a PC.
Yeah.
It ruins you.
Yeah, it makes you sad. You start... You know, doing more spreadsheets just on accident, because that's what they do.
So, you guys, they actually have an actual department with Macs?
Yes. Or?
We're the only department with Macs.
Yeah, the tech guy always complains about them, but, you know, it's we actually got really top of the line. I always tell everybody I work on a Jumbotron at work. My
the
screen's
monitor,
so big.
Yeah, the screen.
Oh, you guys, not iMacs, like desk computers, like.
Well, we have laptops with a, what do they call it, the Lightboy Connect.
Some fancy Mac
whatever
cable.
It connects to the well just like the monitor.
I think fancy Mac register trademark
fancy
Apple.
Not the official.
No, fancy Mac cable. No, that is not the official word. I do not believe.
I don't think Steve Jobs would approve that. But yeah, I mean, you got a lot.
Tim Cook might though.
He might. He knows the future is printers. We got a setup where Aaron and I at least have a laptop, and then we got the big Jumbotron screen, so we can take stuff home and work, which Haneda loves, and then
yeah.
You know, we can have a music going on one screen and big stuff on the other screen, which we love. But.
And same goes with printers and everything too. I mean, really upgrades all that stuff. It's just
we got a giant plotter at work, so we can print banners at work, which is really awesome. And every once in a while, we get to borrow it for whatever the heck we want. So that's pretty cool.
I know. Nate just got a big. He got a ad agency job, but they gave him a laptop like day one. He was all excited because you know.
Yeah,
He's had
it's
full software
first,
and stuff.
Yeah.
But I also knew I was like, yeah. When a company gives you a laptop, it is a hey, this is awesome. I can take this home. But it's also the hey, guess what? You can take home with you.
Yeah. I think I'm in the minority at work where I personally have a policy of I don't check my work email at home.
I'm like, actually pretty much in that same camp.
Yeah, I mean that's my policy. And when I get home, I don't turn on work email and. Yeah, our creative director has my phone number, so she'll call me if it's important. But, you know, it's a nice thing, too, is it you don't have as many emergencies come up.
I actually only have really one email. Well, I check them all at the same time. You know, when you work for yourself, that's
right,
kind of what
yeah,
it works.
Yeah.
I do make a policy, though, of not really responding to most emails that aren't urgent. And by urgent, I mean, is it really urgent?
Right.
Until the next day or during business hours, because it does set kind of a thing. Because there are times where I purposely don't check my emails. Like right now. Hold on, we got to pause the show. I got to check a bunch of emails, guys. Respond to them. And we'll
it might be
right
important.
Back.
They might need a bigger logo.
Always, always make a bigger logo. Actually, it was funny. We were just talking about the pitch off mic and stuff a little bit. But the guy was telling on the TV show on AMC to, like, we got to make that logo a little bigger. And I was like, whoa, the agency's saying that? No.
Oh,
no, leave that up to the client. Always present to the client, like, a logo that's no bigger than, like,
a penny. What,
yeah, a penny at biggest.
Yes.
And then they're like, whoa, but this is on the side of a truck. And you're like, whoa. You know, that's the size that'll look best. And then always leave it up to them to make the logo bigger.
Yes. I couldn't believe it.
Just wrong. All right, we'll be right back, and we're going to wrap this show up. I really appreciate you guys being on the show, telling our people about in-house, because I tell people when it comes to jobs in this profession, it kind of breaks down into a certain set of ways. There's the people who freelance or are self-employed. There's places that work for an agency, either a design agency or an advertising agency. And then there's in-house. And I think they're almost equal probably in percentages. So in-house is probably, I'm guessing it's at least a third of the designers out there, maybe even more. And I think it's kind of overlooked a lot. So.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of love.
Yeah. And every now and then they try to give you guys more love, so we're trying to push it out there. Don't discount it. There are great places. I always say it's all who you're working for. It's who your creative director is, and it's who the head of marketing is. Because I find that if they really respect design and understand what design is, the work is better. When I was in-house and I had people above me that really kind of understood what I did, things were great. And then as the last 6 months I was at this one job, as I reported to 6 different people, by the end where the one guy was like introducing himself as the new leader, and he's like, I want to follow you back to your cubicle next. That is the problem, you're in a cubicle. Are you guys in cubicles?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a drawback.
They're the low wall ones, so we can talk to each other. But
you can see sky out through the windows.
But when he followed me back to the cubicle and was like, I want you to tell me what you do because I have no idea what you would do kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's going to be like that. And all of a sudden things get, it's like, time to look.
Yeah.
Right. We would concur.
And it's hard. But there are, as I said, there are places that are just great. So you guys, hayneedle.com, is that the website?
Yeah, yep. Or you can go to the Foundry. That's another one of our things, too.
Oh, what's the Foundry?
It's a flash sale site. So we do a daily deal with different brands and that sort of thing every day.
More rare finds, kind of like lower quantities of things. But
What kind of things could I find there? Like, what kind of things? Now, these are all home items, right?
Yeah, they're still home furnishing types.
My favorite thing we've ever had.
My own crystal ball. Okay, favorite thing.
My favorite thing we've ever had was the, we had, well...
A real-life human skeleton.
Well, we had...
A dog skeleton?
No, we had...
A stuffed dog.
Alligators. Oh. Well, you got a bird.
Yeah,
we had... We also had a gold...
A dead bird.
We had it, well...
I assume?
So, Aaron, I'll let you... That's your favorite, right?
Okay, Chris, we'll go with your favorite first.
All right. So my favorite was we had a gold-encrusted and jewel-encrusted alligator skull. And we only had one because, where the hell are you going to get two of those?
Well, I think I got 3 in the back room.
Okay, well, you probably bought it. We just had the one, and I was it was actually a really exciting day when we sold that one.
How much was that? How much
was it?
It was like $1,000 at least.
It was really, it was an alligator skull, so you can't get too many of them, but it wasn't cheap.
No.
Now, it's thefoundry.com. Foundry.com, what is it?
Thefoundry.com.
Yeah,
thefoundry.com.
Foundary.
Foundary.
Oh, my.
Instead of R-Y.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah, I got to do
that.
That
was
cool.
Already
it's,
taken.
That's a one-of-a-kind URL, like a one-of-a-kind jewel-encrusted.
Because it's...
Alligator?
Alligator skull.
Okay, not to be confused with the crocodile skull.
Right.
I think that's what I got 3 of in the back room.
Yeah.
So you're right, I don't think... Ooh, now I need an alligator.
Yeah,
too.
I got to complete the set. Yeah. It's like a Pokemon.
Aaron, your favorite?
I don't know if this was my favorite, but I guess most interesting was right along the same lines was they had these bird skeletons all propped up and hanging inside like one of those glass, almost like a cake dish kind of thing.
They were totally articulated.
Yeah.
We sell more than skeletons.
I mean, I've bought like really cool, mirrors. And,
right. I've got a...
But those aren't memorable, like...
No.
5 years later, hey, where'd you
really
get this?
They have, like, a very, I guess, from people living here in Omaha.
No, I mean, they're not memorable to tell people about.
They're very, like, all of their furnishings are usually pretty, like, industrial and just, like, cool materials.
High fashion stuff, kind of. Yeah. Like, I've got a set of magnets on my wall that look like ninja stars.
Stuff that you would never see at the Mart, let's just say.
And by that, you mean the Nebraska Furniture Mart here in town.
Right, yeah.
Okay. And for those out of town, that is the store that everyone in Omaha is forced to buy their furniture from because they run everybody else out of town. We have actually very few furniture stores because of that.
Yeah, we don't have an IKEA or Crate and Barrel or any of that stuff because the Mart chases them away. But
yeah,
Warren Buffett at his finest. All right, well, we're going to wrap this show up. But first, I want to say, so I'm doing student portfolio reviews last week, and I cannot say this enough because I had to say it to every student there. Do not show every piece you've ever done. We're just going to give an advice to students. You know, it's coming up to graduation time or portfolio time. If you have more than 8 to 10 pieces, and by pieces, I am referencing, like, projects. Like, if you have a campaign that has 4 or 5 components, that's one piece.
Right.
I would say. I would say if you have more than 8 to 10 and you're still a student, you have way too many in your book.
Yeah.
In fact, even at professional levels, you know, maybe you can push it up to like 12, depending on what you're trying to do. Now, this isn't on your website. This is like in your book when you're presenting it, which is different. But student level, no more than 8 to 10. If I have to tell another, I mean, it's like everyone. It's like you need to narrow this down, please.
Yeah,
please narrow this down.
You just want the best of the best. The more you offer.
And I say 8 to 10, but really, they always say only show your best work. I think really if you have less than 5,
closer to 8.
If you have less than 5, you might have to throw some stuff in there that's not real good just to fill in out that book. Because people are like, you got 4 things to show me.
Stick it kind of in the middle.
But you know, even if you can go as low as 5, I'm guessing.
As
but
long
no
as
more
good.
Than 10.
Yeah. I mean,
well, no, I mean if you're going lower than 5 and you don't have 5 that are good, maybe take another class.
Yeah.
maybe
make a
just start
invitation for a friend.
Or
good
maybe
call.
Just find a client and do some work. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, pro bono even. If it gives you that experience, if it gives you a nice portfolio piece, it's worth it.
There you go. I like this. Chris, what's your advice to the students today?
So I teach part-time at a college here in Omaha, and I teach a web design class, and so I always scare the crap out of my students by telling them to learn the web, or it's way harder to find a job. If you don't learn at least, you know, bare minimum HTML, CSS, you're shooting yourself in the foot. It's the only part of the industry that's growing at all. So,
and I will vouch for Chris on this because you were having trouble. That was what you were when you were on the show before, and you were having trouble finding a job. You started working here, we taught you web, and boom, what do you know? Chris has
a job
at a web company.
Yeah, so,
how's that work?
Donovan's amazing.
No, I mean, you just teach basic web. Basic web will get you a job because there's few people to do it, so your skill set doesn't have to be as good to get in the door. And in this profession, getting in the door is the most important thing. Because once you're in the door, you can get the skills, you can get the projects, they can get you something else if you want something else.
Yeah. And most places that do anything with web aren't going to expect you to know, like, really crazy JavaScript ninja work. Like, you know, you got to know the basics so you can at least talk to somebody about it. But usually you're going to have somebody that's way better at, you know, the really dense code work than you are to go ahead and, you know, kind of take it from there. But at least to be able to talk intelligently about it and, you know, have an understanding of how it even works. You got to have that now. There's just no excuse.
Yeah, learn how to save a JPEG.
Yeah, or GIF.
Is it GIF or GIF? I always forget.
I always
say GIF, but I don't know.
Doc Brown said gigawatts, so instead of gigawatts, I think GIF.
GIF is what I've always heard.
All right, chime in. I think CompuServe owns those anyway, that the actual proprietary like coding behind it, I think, you know, they still own that file format for some reason.
CompuServe.
Yeah, they're probably just around just for that, just to get their, you know, 2-cent royalty checks from Adobe for the right to actually be able to save that type of file format. Aaron, you got anything for the students out there?
I guess just to kind of echo what I was trying to say earlier was just, you know, I felt like maybe I, and a lot of students maybe do this, is I kind of waited until after I graduated to go out there and just start getting in there, just start doing work. You know, I did internships, I had a job, but I didn't really, I would encourage students to not wait, you know, just go for it. Even if you haven't finished your degree, just start getting out there.
I think I did 3 internships one of which was paid before I got a job. So yeah, it makes a huge difference.
No, I think those are all great. Well, either way, we'll see you guys soon. Really appreciate you guys being on the show. We'll see you in Boston.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. As I said, we'll be waving a microphone around. We'll be chasing these guys back down again, so you'll hear more about Hay Needle.
Throwing tea in the ocean.
I think that is what we do down
That's
there.
That's all they do. That's all I know about Boston.
I mean, all I do when I'm in Omaha is eat corn, so all I do there is throw tea in the ocean.
I actually rode a cow over here, so. That's...
I rode one into the office today. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Please leave comments, talk, whatever, 36point.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for having us.